Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Robert Gates has served eight presidents. He was the Secretary of Defense under both George W. Bush and Barack Obama. He was the head of the CIA. He was the head of Texas A&M University. He's now the president of the Boy Scouts of America. And he has a new book out. It's called A Passion for Leadership, Lessons on Change and Reform from 50 Years of Public Service. Robert Gates joins us now. Secretary Gates, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you very much, Jeremy.
Well, in all of the things that you have done, and now we read that you've served eight presidents in your lifetime, in addition to working at other organizations, what is the one accomplishment that you're most proud of?
I think what I'm most proud of is the things that I was able to do between 2006 and 2011 to help protect our men and women in uniform during the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, to get them better armor, better medical care, better intelligence and reconnaissance, shorter medevac times. I think the thing that I'm proudest of is that the measures that I took based on everything that I've been told and heard saved a lot of lives and limbs, and I can't think of anything that makes me prouder than that.
And what kind of lessons on leadership did you need to do those things? Because as you write in this book, getting anything done, especially at the Department of Defense, is not an easy task.
Well, in every case, the bureaucracy was against what I wanted to do. And essentially, it was how do you gather the information? How do you determine the nature of the problem and what the solution should be? And then giving everybody a chance to weigh in, but then making a decision. And in several of these cases, I virtually was alone. There weren't very many people either in uniform or civilians who supported those decisions. And so at a certain point, a person actually has to lead and do the right thing.
Well, you actually write about how you walked into the Department of Defense alone on your first day. You didn't bring any entourage of people with you.
I think one of the most important things, especially for a new leader, is to demonstrate that he or she has confidence in the professional staff that are already there. But I felt it was important, particularly in the middle of two wars, neither of which were going well, to communicate to people that I wasn't going to carry out a big purge. I was going to go with the people that were there and assume that they could do the job given the right kind of leadership.
Well, this is the thing that sort of was puzzling as I was reading this is how do you both come in and say, I want to make a lot of changes? Because as you say, you don't want to come in and lead organizations and just caretake. You want to get things done and come in and make changes. How do you do that and at the same time bring everyone along with you? Because there are going to be a lot of people who are against what you're doing, who like things just fine the way that they were.
I think the first thing is to first of all get people to accept the fact that things aren't going as well as they should or that there are changes that are needed. And then the key is to listen to the people who are already there, because often that you have the talent working for you, people who have a good idea of how to make things better in an organization, and they often don't get listened to. And so the first thing is to listen to them, integrate their ideas into your own judgments and your own instincts, and then move forward. The key is transparency and inclusion.
You say you're a fan of task forces to get big things done.
Well, they're silo busters. Most organizations are like pyramids, pretty good communication up and down, but very poor communication laterally between different elements of an organization, between different colleges or schools in a university, between different services in the military. Task forces provide a way to get people out of their ordinary bureaucratic routine, get them in an environment where they're sharing ideas with people from a different part of the organization, and people often in those kinds of settings can come up with great ideas and new approaches. The key is to be careful how you structure a task force and to always put a deadline on when you're going to dismantle it.
Although there are some people who, when they hear somebody in Washington say, I'm setting up a task force to figure out this big issue, they think either, oh, this person's just delaying the decision making, or they don't want to make it themselves. They're too scared to make it themselves, so they'd rather have a task force tell them to do it.
Well, my instructions to task forces were, the last thing I want from you is consensus. One of my favorite quotes is, a committee is a cul-de-sac down which ideas are lured and quietly strangled. Hmm. And when I was director of CIA at the very end of the Cold War, I created something like 24 task forces in terms of how to restructure the intelligence community and move it away from its preoccupation with the Soviet Union. But the longest deadline for any of those task forces was 3 months. My approach was, if I get consensus from you, it better be on something very bold, because otherwise I'm sending you back to the drawing table.
We're speaking with former Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who's got a new book out on leadership. And Secretary Gates, I want to ask you, you shepherded big changes on gay rights at two organizations, the Pentagon with the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and at the Boy Scouts with the decision last summer to allow gay leaders of Boy Scout troops. Which was harder?
Well, and there was a third. I did the same thing in 1992 at CIA. I think they all present their own challenges, and the key is, again, letting people feel like they've had a voice. We did surveys of 400,000 men and women in uniform and 150,000 military spouses, and the amazing thing is, we discovered through those surveys that about 2/3 of those in uniform thought that changing the rules on Don't Ask, Don't Tell would not have any negative impact on the military and in fact, might improve things.
Still, I'm sure there were a lot of people both within the military and the Department of Defense and at the Boy Scouts who did not like this change at all.
Well, that probably is true, but I think that that they're in the minority, and I think particularly in this day and age. One of my favorite sayings is, to avoid criticism, say nothing, do nothing, be nothing. So you, at a certain point, you just have to exercise leadership and move the organization forward.
What do you think of the leadership of President Obama?
Well, I think that the biggest problem that the president has had is when it comes to devising strategies and the implementation and execution of those strategies. He's very good at articulating a goal, at articulating a need that the country has. But when it comes to actual execution, there have been a lot of shortcomings. And the best example is the difficulties in the rollout of the Obamacare website. Frankly, my own view is part of that problem is his unwillingness to truly delegate authority to his cabinet officials and centralizing implementation in the White House, where they don't have the capability to do that.
Did you feel that that happened to you, that you didn't have the authority you needed at defense?
Oh, I had all the authority I needed because I basically took the authority, and I wouldn't allow the kind of micromanagement that has been a concern elsewhere. The president was my boss, and he gave me direction, and I did what he told me to do. But once he told me what his decision was, it was my responsibility to execute, not the responsibility of the White House staff.
I want to ask you about one other person who you've worked with very closely, and that is Hillary Clinton, who is now obviously a leading candidate for president. How do you think her leadership is?
Well, I worked with Secretary Clinton only on foreign policy and national security issues, and I really had no insight into her management of the State Department. I found her a good colleague. I found her tough-minded. We worked well together.
Will you be voting for her?
Well, I think we'll – this whole presidential race is such a mess right now. I think we'll just all sit back and see how this plays out.
Well, what do you mean when you say it's such a mess? Just there's so many people, or what they're saying?
Well, there's so many people, and frankly, when it comes to, we've been talking about how do you make decisions, how do you execute those decisions, how do you develop strategies and so on. I'm not hearing much of any of that from any of the presidential candidates. I'm hearing a lot of promises, and I'm hearing a lot of grandiose ideas and proposals and so on, but I'm not hearing much about how do you fix dysfunctional bureaucracies that are so frustrating to most Americans. One of the issues that people like Sanders and Trump and others have tapped into is a frustration and a disgust on the part of a lot of Americans with our political leaders and with the bureaucracies they have to deal with every day. And I'm not hearing any of the candidates talk about How are they going to make life better for Americans by making government and other organizations work better?
Well, and as we watch the campaign right now, of course, there's so much talk about foreign policy. The world seems like it's such a mess at the moment. Is that how you see it, or do you see order among the chaos?
No, I wish I did. I think we face as many different kinds of challenges internationally now as we have faced really ever since I joined the government 50 years ago. I think that whether it's Russia or China or various aspects of the Middle East, Iran, North Korea, the immigration issue, particularly in Europe, the whole question of climate change and how you deal with that and what the consequences are. There are a lot of different issues that confront us, and frankly, we don't seem to have very good strategies for dealing with any of them right now.
Would you serve in another administration if asked?
Well, I'm getting pretty old at this point. I think it's time to pass the baton.
That's Robert Gates, a former U.S. Defense Secretary and author of a new book, A Passion for Leadership, Lessons on Change and Reform from 50 Years of Public Service. Secretary Gates, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy. Appreciate it.